This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 111, I think, if I have my count correct. And if I have my secondary count correct, it is 3 days until the rapture, and then just a few days after that, it's the end of the world. So prepare, as you all feel you need to prepare, because apparently the world is coming to an end this Saturday. Or more appropriately, the rapture is going to take place this Saturday, the 21st, and then 153 days after that, the world is going to come to an end. So I hope you all have made your preparations and, you know, you got it all together. I'm contemplating whether or not I'm going to do an additional podcast on Saturday. Because according to this one guy who was supposedly in with the irrefutable proofs and understanding of all this, according to him, I believe that 6 o'clock local time Saturday night in the Pacific Rim nations, at that point is when all the earthquakes are supposed to start up. So I was figuring that I would just, you know, pick something that was close to local time and turn on the TV and just, you know, wait for the earthquakes to start. And then maybe do a podcast on that. Who knows? Might end up with a podcast like there is in the middle of 2012, the movie. That guy had quite the podcast because he was in the right place at the right time. So I'm considering it. Just considering it. But we will see. And then, you know, if Jesus doesn't come back on May the 21st, then I guess we'll just go on with our lives on May the 22nd. I just want to make a caveat here to say that I am certainly aware that Jesus might come back on the 21st. He certainly has every prerogative to come back anytime that he wants to come back. But frankly, I'm not holding my breath. So anyways, we talked about that list last week, and you know, we're on the countdown, so it's just a couple of days away. Frankly, if Jesus actually did come back, especially if I went in the rapture with him, which I might not, according to these people, because of my mocking attitude towards it, you know, that really would be fabulous. I mean, there honestly is nothing to hold me here that if Jesus called, I would say, well, no, I haven't done such and so yet. I'd just say, yep, that's it. We're going. So anyways, I just went through a rolling stop and there was a policeman there. I'm looking to see if he's coming to get me. He's not. Anyways, so this week, the other thing I wanted to mention is it's unbelievable to me how much national press this May the 21st thing is getting. Just a few, you know, an hour ago when I was waiting for my buddy to come to dinner tonight. Had a nice meal with him tonight. I was reading in like the Los Angeles Times or whatever that big Los Angeles newspaper. I was reading and they were talking about the entrepreneurs that are trying to cash in on the post-rapture opportunities. So there's this one company that if you pay them $15.95, they will send emails for you after the rapture takes place to your loved ones to say, see, I told you, well, not in essence, see, I told you it was coming and you better get saved now because wrath is coming on the world. There is also a group of company of, they say, of atheists that have started a company for people to take care of their pets after they're raptured, that they'll charge you $100-some-odd. I think they just recently raised their prices, given the impending rapture of the church. They recently raised their prices to $135. And for $135, they will come and get your pets after you're raptured so that your pets will be okay. Honestly, are we so tied to our earthly life here that if when God Himself calls us to be His own, that our thoughts are going to go back and say, well, I hope somebody feeds my dog. I mean, okay, I will just stop, because if I keep talking about that, I'm going to say some things that are unkind. Anyways, so, and that would be flesh. Oh, I just wonder how many people have actually paid this guy, you know, whatever it was, $125, $115, $135, whatever it is, actually paid this guy that amount of money to come take care of their pets after their rapture. So there you go. I mentioned last week that I would be talking about a man's reflection. I had read a CNN article by this man in the opinion pages. I also went out and I saw his TED talk. For those of you who haven't heard me talk about the TED talks or the TED conferences in the past, these are conferences that are held, I think, multiple times a year now. They started out just once a year. Very intriguing. Very interesting. They just get people of note, people whom they feel have something important to say, and they have them give an 18-minute talk, or less, apparently, or a 5-minute talk. Sometimes they're five. They might have different formats for different conferences. I don't know. But it's really, really intriguing. And several months after the TED conferences, then the organization that runs TED puts the videos out so they can be consumed by the general populace. And so I did go out and listen to this man's talk. Really a fascinating talk. I enjoyed it a lot. A little over 5 minutes. You can find it on YouTube. And what you search for on YouTube is the topic, what I thought when my plane crashed. And the name of the guy is Rick Elias, E-L-I-A-S. And Rick Elias was on the flight that crashed in the Hudson, flight 1549. He was on the flight that was piloted by Chelsea Sullenberg. And he talked about the things that went through his mind and the lessons that he's, the three most important lessons that he's learned since this incident. The TED Talk was particularly interesting because he actually prefaced his talk with a little more setup. Apparently, the plane had taken off. It was still climbing to altitude. And he said, we heard, he made the sound, and I don't know that I've got it for sure, but it was like, you know, he said, we heard this bad sound. They knew it was a bad sound. And at first, there was assurances that, you know, everything will be okay. The plane was actually turning around. They were going to try to land it. Everything was going to be fine. And then he said, the engine stopped. And he talked about the eerie feeling that you get when you're on a plane and there's no sound coming from the engine. And he said, over the intercom came a voice with as little emotion as he had ever heard in a voice that said three words, brace for impact. this is an interesting story. Because suddenly, when you're in that situation, I've been on planes and been bounced around. And I can honestly say that as I was being bounced around, I started getting calm. And we'll get to that in a minute, why I think that is. He also talks about the fact that a lot of the things that he thought was important weren't so important anymore. Like, he really had felt no driving need to talk to the stewardess, who was just a few feet from him, because Rick Elias was in seat 1D. I mean, he was right up at the front of the plane. And the stewardess had strapped herself in. And he said there wasn't really any need to talk to her, he said, because he could tell everything he needed to know by looking at her eyes. And he said there was a look of terror in her eyes. And he knew that they were going to crash and they were going to die. And during that time frame then, where they were going down, and before Scully was actually able to put it into the Hudson without breaking the plane up and was able to get everybody off the plane, this man was convinced he was going to die. And so it's really fascinating to me what goes through people's heads at that point. And here's some of what went through his head. He said the first thing that he learned through the experience is that everything changes in an instant. He thought about all the things that he wanted to do, about all the things that he had left undone, that he should have done and been putting off. And he regretted that he hadn't done them. And after the incident, he said that he now makes more of an effort to do the things that should be done when they need to be done. The important things, like repairing relationships. I suppose things like saying, I love you, to your spouse. Because we all think we have all kinds of time to get things done. And that is one of the classic ways. I'm peeling off on my own riff on this now. That's one of the classic ways that the flesh uses to distract us from the things that we need to do. It says, oh, you can do that tomorrow. You're too busy right now. You've got other things on your mind. You can do that tomorrow. You don't have to call that person right now. I found a great amount of strength in my life that when the thought comes through my head, oh, I should call so-and-so and I should say X or Y, not out of anger, but just out of gratitude, out of mercy, out of kindness, out of joy, out of love, that I have found there is so much benefit from simply picking up the phone and doing it as soon as possible. I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I was talking with a buddy and he was pressing me on some issues. And he was saying, look, you're always saying X, Y, Z. Why don't you do this and that and the other? And I said, you know, I said, I understand what you're saying, and I think you got a good point, and maybe that is what I should do. And I got my car, and I was driving off from that conversation, and I just suddenly had such an appreciation for the fact that this guy was pushing me, making me consider what I was doing, that I picked up the phone, and I called him, and I said, hey, I said, you know, there aren't many people in my life who will push back at me and make me think about what may be some presuppositions in my life. And I really appreciate the fact that you do that. And he said, oh, good. He said, because I walked out of that meeting thinking, man, Phil's going to think I'm a jerk. I said, no, man. I really appreciate the fact that you're willing to do that. See, if I had let that moment go, not only would I have left that undone and possibly missed an opportunity because I would have never done it in the future, but my buddy, having left that meeting, might have thought, well, I shouldn't be doing that, and would start have pulling back and not saying, well, what about this? What about that? Have you thought about this? So it's really good because everything can change in an instant. So we really need to make an effort to not leave things undone that can be taken care of with a call, with a visit, with a dinner. This man said that the second thing that he learned is, he said, as he was reflecting back on his life, he felt like he had had some accomplishments, that he'd been able to grow as a person, to learn new things. And he said that he felt like he'd had a good life as he was coming towards the end of it there. And then he said, but in my humanity, I've also allowed my ego to get in. And I regretted the time that I wasted on things that didn't matter. So this is sort of the flip side to it. First of all, we don't have all the time in the world. You need to do the things and get done the things that need to be gotten done. But then also, we need to not spend negative energy on things that really aren't that important. He was saying that he has made a conscious effort to pull back and get negative energy out of his life. That's his way of saying it. For me, I say you listen less to the flesh in your life. You give the flesh less reign over your life. And he'd said it'd been like 2 years since he'd had a fight with his wife. And he had decided that he no longer tries to be right. He chooses to be happy. Yeah, that's pretty good. And he said the third thing that he learned as he was mentally counting down, as he watched the water get closer and closer and closer, he had this sense, and I'm sure not all the people on the plane felt this way, but apparently there was enough discipline in his life, and he had reduced the noise level in his life enough that he could say this. He said, I had a sense of, wow, dying is not scary. It's almost like we've been preparing for it our whole lives. He said, but it was sad. He didn't want to go. He loved his life. And that sadness came together in one thought, which was, I only wish for one thing. I only wish I could see my kids grow up. He said it was a month later that he was at a performance of his 7-year-old daughter, and he just started to cry. And he realized between those two points what his sadness was connected to. And his sadness was connected to the fact that for a moment there, it looked like that he was not going to have a chance to see his daughter grow up, and he wasn't going to have a chance to be the dad that he could be. And he said, at that recital, as he was listening, what he had decided was that the only thing that really matters in life was being a great dad. I'm getting my mail. And I thought all those things were very good. You know, a lot of times, the flesh has us so distracted and running back and forth and back and forth about this, the other, telling us you have to get this done, you have to get that done, that what we neglect is we neglect the relationships. Because the things that he thought, oh, I'm not going to have a chance to do that, were not things about his office. Oh, I won't get that report finished. Oh, I won't be able to put that business proposal together. Won't be able to pay those vendors. The things that he wouldn't be able to do, that he thought about, were specifically relationally oriented. And when he was thinking about, I'm backing into my garage, one moment. You know, when he was thinking about the fact that he had let his ego get involved in some of his life, I will guarantee you that what he was thinking about is in his relationships, he had allowed his ego to rob him of certain experiences, to sour certain experiences. That the negative energy that he talks about is specifically related to things that taint relationships. And of course, the last one, that the most important thing in the world is to be a good dad, is all about relationships. Because that really is the core of this life. Our relationships with others are the core that true joy comes from, that contentment comes from. You know, when we reduce the noise level in our lives and we manifest the spirit, kindness, generosity, joy, love, peace, all those things, there's this deep joy that will come to us as we are in relationship with those around us. And it won't come any other way. And obviously, the most important relationship in our life is our relationship with our Creator and our relationship with the one who is passionately in love with us. It's really interesting just going through life and seeing how people have different ways of relating to this very basic idea of, if you are self-absorbed, if you are egotistical, that creates noise that separates you in your relationship with your Creator. It makes it harder for you to hear Him speaking to you. But when you remove that negative energy, when you reduce the level of volume that's coming from your flesh, that all of a sudden you can start getting more connected. You start to feel more spiritual. We were just watching Oprah Winfrey from yesterday with her interview with the Ralph Lauren and Ricky Lauren, I think is his wife's name. And they were talking about how that they have this huge ranch and it's a very spiritual place. Well, what's happening is they're getting there and they're seeing this majestic beauty and they're getting quiet and their spirit starts resonating with God, the Spirit of God. Whether or not they know that or not, it's that core relationship that's important. So, what's really the takeaway on this for me to hear this guy talk is I'm really glad that as his plane was crashing, that he had enough relationship in his life that he didn't necessarily fear dying, But the experience did awaken in him a desire to strengthen his relationships all across the board, and specifically with his children. And I think that's a wonderful thing. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.